In France, as much as in many other countries, during the whole history of mankind, there have been quite a lot of very strange phenomena in the skies.
Ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
Hello out there, my friends. This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 3. It is March 23rd, 2008, and this week we're calling over to Paris, France, for another look at international ufology with our guest, Gildas Bourdais, noted French ufologist. He's going to be joining us for an in-depth discussion on the French UFO scene. We're going to be talking about its history and evolution, the fascinating story of the various official government-sponsored French UFO projects throughout the years, the Cometa Report, media coverage of UFOs, the attitude of the everyday public with regards to the UFO phenomenon, the release of the French UFO files in March 2007, the state of French ufology today, and tons more. It is a French-rich episode here with Gildas Bourdais. What he has to say is fascinating stuff, and it is definitely a must-hear interview for any student of international ufology and the global UFO scene. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Gildas Bourdais, let me give you a little bit of background on him. Gildas Bourdais was born in 1939, studied business administration, worked in technical publishing, and lives near Paris, France. He became interested in UFOs, first by reading the books of French author Aimé Michel in the 1960s, and the books of Dr. J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée in the 1970s. He became an active researcher only at the end of the 1980s, after becoming aware of new developments at that time, especially regarding Roswell, UFO secrecy, abductions, and cattle mutilations. He became also interested in the historical, mythological, and religious dimensions of the UFO phenomenon. He's the author of 6 books, and has been a speaker at several conferences, starting in Brazil in 1997, and in France, Italy, Great Britain, the United States, and Ireland. And now, my friends, without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded in 2 parts, first on the 13th of February, and then on the 15th of February. It's a pretty seamless cut, I don't think anyone will even notice it, but for the record, this interview was recorded on February 13th and 15th. Gildas Bourdais, talking about French ufology on BOA Audio Season 3.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition of Banal of America Audio. We have a very cool guest here, direct from Paris, France, Gildas Bourdais. He's going to be telling us all about French ufology and the French UFO scene. As many of the listeners know, I have a great interest in the international UFO phenomenon. When I finally got a hold of Gildas, I knew I wanted to have him on the show here, so we can learn something here about the French UFO scene and French ufology. And Gildas is one of the big players over there in French ufology. So I'm excited to talk to him and really find out a lot about what's going on over there in Europe with the UFO scene. Gildas, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome to Banal of America Audio.
Hi, I'm glad to be invited.
Well, let's start out with just sort of the general biography background. You know, who is Gildas Bourdais? How did you get interested in the UFO phenomenon?
Well, I am 68 years old now, and I am retired, but I worked in technical publishing after having made some business studies, the equivalent of an MBA. Mm-hmm. So that's my professional background. It has nothing to do with UFOs, but I became interested in that long time ago, when I was already a student. I was there was already some interesting French studies being done at that time. You know, there had been a big UFO waves in 1954 in France, which was well studied by a French journalist Aimé Michel, and he made a good book. So it was already very interesting in France. And then there was, of course, all the UFO scene, especially in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I became more and more interested. And especially in the during the 70s when, well, to tell you the truth, when there was the publication of the Condon Report, which said there was nothing, I believed it.
Oh, wow.
That was in 1969. So I lost somewhat interest. I was more interested in the conquest of the moon, the moon landings, the mm-hmm. Apollo landings
yeah.
at the time. But then there was the book of Alan Hynek, the astronomer who had been the scientific advisor for the Blue Book study in the U.S. Air Force. And these astronomers published a book saying, yes, there are UFOs. So it was a big shock, actually. And I told myself, if this man says that, there must be something to it, you see. And then I became interested. And again, and in France, at the same time, there were many UFO observations, and there was a lot of interest for UFOs in France with a journalist, Jean-Claude Bourret, who made radio shows and called OVNI pas de panique, UFOs don't panic, you see. It was very interesting. And he made a series of books. And that's when there was a creation, though at the end of the 70s in France, but I suppose we are going to go back on that, of the French service. And I became more and more interested. There was I was less interested in the 80s, because it was becoming confusing again. But I caught a book almost by chance toward the end of the 80s, which was the second book of the American writer Whitley Strieber about abduction experiences. And I was fascinated by this story. I began reading lots of books on abductions and also on Roswell later on. So I became a kind of French specialist on Roswell and... Finally, I have written books in the 90s, and even recently I have written 6 books, and I have become known as a ufologist. That's my story.
There you go. You've given me already a lot of food for thought here. Before we talk about the official French ufology, I guess let's talk a little bit about what you know as far as the history of the UFO phenomenon in France. You know, like here in America, we sort of have the airships of the late 1800s, and then we have Foo Fighters of World War II, and then you know when and my listeners know the history of ufology in America from that point on.
Yes.
What was going on over in France as far as UFO sightings and the evolution of the phenomenon there?
Yes. Well, publicly speaking, there were observations of UFOs around the beginning of the 50s, some interesting sightings. And as I said already, there was a big wave in 1954. There were lots of close encounters already at that time, many more than nowadays, actually.
Huh.
There was a sustained interest with many books. There were already some private groups of ufology being created at the time, in the 50s. There were some pioneers, like the French writer Jimmy Guyeux, who wrote a couple of books, which were... quite advanced at the time. So there was an interest for UFOs in France, definitely. But these things became much more serious with the creation of the French official study group in 1977,
yeah,
called GEPAN. GEPAN means group for... what does it mean, by the way? for the study of... unidentified aerospatial phenomena,
mm-hmm.
which means in French, phénomène aérospatiaux non identifié. The initials is PAN, P-A-N, which is the same as UAP in English, you see.
Yeah.
And so there was a creation of French service in 1977, unofficial service, inside the French National Center for Special Studies, Centre National d'Études Spatiales, CNES, mm-hmm. it was a small service, of course, but it had the luck to come across rapidly upon some very interesting cases.
Let me jump in with a question here based on you sent an awesome article that you've written called The Death and Rebirth of Official French Ufology. And,
right. That's the story, yes.
And there'll be, we'll have a hard link to that at the website with the interview. And the question I had that is sort of in the time frame that you're talking about with JPON is that you say in the article that the creation of JPON was really driven by the military and was opposed by science.
Exactly. That's an interesting point, I think. Because there was a military study which was made in 1974, or maybe later, I don't know exactly the date, but a couple of years before the creation of JPON. Mm-hmm. And it was made inside the Institute for Advanced Studies on National Defense, or in French, Institut des Hautes Études de Défense Nationale. They had made recommendation. I have a copy of it, actually. It was given to me. And they recommended the creation of JPON. But on the other hand, in the scientific and intellectual circles, there was very little consideration for UFOs. They were considered to be phony stories, purely psychological phenomena. And so there was, there was a sharp contrast between the military on one side and some people in the CNES, like the director of the time, Yves Cyr. If you have seen my paper, you have his photo on it. Mm-hmm. And he was a very important person in the history of French ufology, because he created JPON, and together with the engineer Claude Poher, who had done himself some studies personally, like statistical studies. So these people joined and together for the creation of JPON. That's how it happened.
Yeah.
After that, there were some ups and downs, as you have seen in my story, in the story, and some sharp ups and downs, actually.
You're saying the sharp ups and downs in JPON or just over the course of time since then, with, you know, the closing and the opening and all that stuff?
Well, there were conflicts as soon as it was created, actually.
Oh, really?
That's one thing I didn't mention in my article, but let me tell you a word about that. In France at the time, there was a split in among ufologists. Mm-hmm. Some of them began to be very skeptical about UFOs. Let me explain this way, because there were young people, many of them who were convinced that everything was going to be revealed, that they were going to find the truth about UFOs, etc.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen, you know. We are still faced with a big mystery. So they became skeptical, some of them. Mm-hmm. They began attacking JPON as soon as it was created, you know. French ufologists attacked JPON. So that's another peculiar situation. A particularity of the French story, that the ufologists were attacking the JPON at the time when JPON was launching into very interesting studies. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's strange. It's very strange.
It's very strange, yes.
Were they skeptical of the government aspect of it, where they thought it was going to be part of the cover-up? Is that sort of where their complaints were?
Some of them, yes. There were, well, the skeptics were against UFOs.
Yeah.
But there were also some conspirationist-oriented people already at the time.
Yeah.
Who were already denouncing the cover-up in France. So the JPON was attacked on both sides in some way. And this is still the case today, by the way.
Really?
It is still that way today. In the French JPON of today, you have the skeptics. I am speaking of ufology here, the ufological population. There are skeptics which are, they have published a book on the internet attacking everything that JPON has done in 30 years, all the best cases. And on the other side, you have people, conspirationist minded, who keep denouncing cover-up. So That's an interesting point. Let's talk about it 1 second. Are there sacred fires in France? I think there are, yes, probably, but not many. Not many. That's another very big difference with the American scene, because in the United States, you don't have actually any official service today.
Yeah.
But everyone understands that there are big studies, you know, big fires. And as you know, there has been a press conference lately in November in Washington, mm-hmm. with many important witnesses, like two generals and others, who ask for the reactivation of official studies in the United States. Who knows? Maybe this is going to happen. I don't know. Do you know?
I wish.
I don't know.
I wish.
Okay.
Let me jump in here on the timeline and ask you, when you were telling your biography part here, you said things were confusing in the 80s. Did you mean
yes.
in the UFO scene things were confusing, or just that, you know, you had other things going on in your life and you weren't interested in UFOs?
No, the UFO scene was becoming confusing because it was becoming very complex. There were many cases which drew attention at that time of sightings which displayed some absurd scenes. There were some crazy observations of beings like we already had seen that in 1954, but it began to weigh a lot on ufology,
yeah.
It seems to me. And then there was in the United States that things became much more complex also with the beginning of the Roswell case and many testimonies about secret research and operations, mm-hmm. and also a very big new development, which was many more and more testimonies of abductions.
Yeah.
And also, you had this very peculiar and worrying problem of cattle mutilations, which apparently, well, that's my opinion, which is shared by many people, which is somehow linked with UFOs. I don't know what you think about that, but all these added up to make us very, very, well, it was becoming very confusing, in fact.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
Do you want to keep going here with the chronology of official French ufology? Should we keep talking about
yes,
that?
Yes, we can okay. come back on that. And then, so what happened at the beginning of the 80s was they came across two very good cases, the Trans-en-Provence case and Lamarant in 1981 and 82. Mm-hmm. And they made some very sharp studies in that. Especially on, in Trans-en-Provence, there was a brief landing of a small UFO in a garden in the south of France, which left a round trace on the ground and which made some very bizarre effects on plants around. And this was very well studied. There was the military police officers who came and took measurement pictures and took samples of the plants, which were studied in a public laboratory. There were agreements, by the way, which had been passed with several laboratories, so all this was done very well, actually, despite the critics, because there are also, as I said, people who criticized everything, who said that it was no good at all, but that's not true. It was very well made. It drew a lot of interest in the world, around the world. But what happened then is that obviously this didn't please at all the scientific establishment. And shortly afterward, the activity of GEPON was reduced drastically. So the engineer in charge at the time was Alain Esther, because Claude Poher had left already. He was disappointed because after a couple of years, he had the impression that they didn't listen to him. So he had left already. Mm-hmm. Then Alain Esther left in 1989, 1983, though that's 1 year after the two cases I was talking about, the activity was reduced, and there was only when Jung and Jr. left, Jean-Jacques Velasco. And Jean-Jacques Velasco has been a courageous man. I think we can say that today, because he left, he remained, I mean, at Japan during 20 years, and he retired just last year.
Let me sort of, I'll sort of jump in and help you out a little bit here.
Yes.
Because Japan, eventually they changed the name. It became SEPRA. So why don't you talk about
yes,
the transition?
Yes. Well, it was the time when the service was very reduced, and SEPRA didn't refer anymore to UFOs. Actually, it was supposed to study debris from rockets and satellites, things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was still studying UFOs, but very discreetly. But what happened is that in 1999, a group of senior officers, in both public and military, called Cometa, issued a report, the Cometa report in 1999, mm-hmm. which had quite a lot of impact. And in that report, they said several things. They said that, yes, there are UFOs. Yes, they are probably extraterrestrial. They pose a problem of national defense. And there is obviously a policy of secrecy in the United States about that, mainly in the United States, not only, but mainly. And we should resume studying UFOs seriously in France. We should reactivate the group. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened in the following years. Again, there was a very shaky history again for a couple of years, because the engineer Velasco got tired of being rebuked all the time on both sides, as I explained, from the skeptics and from the conspirationists. You know, the, mm-hmm. And he published his book, his own book, in 2004, which was called the time OVNI L'Evidence, UFOs the Evidence, which is a play on words in French, because in French, evidence means obviousness, actually. When he meant, yes, of course, the presence of UFOs is obvious.
Yeah.
He said about almost the same things as the Cometa report, actually, it was. And then there was a almost immediate reaction against that, which was to close the service, the SEPRA. But then 1 year later, they realized that it was impossible to remain that way. There was a lot of pressure in the press and around to reopen it. And the decision was made in July 2005 by a new director of CNES, the French National Center for Spatial Studies, to create a new department. And that was what we have now. The Japon, the same name with an I added for information. Japon, Japon. So there was a new engineer who replaced Jean-Jacques Velasco, Jacques Patenet, and he's already a senior engineer in NES, 59. He was 59 already, and he's not very far from retirement now. So probably in a couple of years there will be a new man at Japon.
Wow.
And perhaps it will give some new blood to Japan, who knows, huh? Because this man is an honorable engineer. He's a nice man. I have met him several times. But obviously, he doesn't want to shake too much the the tree, if I can say that.
Yeah. And one of the points that you make in your piece here, The Death and Rebirth of Official French Ufology, is a common misconception by some that Cometa was issued by the French government, which it wasn't. It was a civilian, independent civilian report, correct?
Yes, yes. It was a civilian, independent and civilian. But to tell the truth, they began the study with the approval of the Institute for Advanced Studies on National Defense, the IHEDN. They began the study inside IHEDN. At the time, the head of IHEDN, General Nolin, approved them. And in the Cometa report, if you have seen it with the illustration, you have the picture of the General Nola, who was high in the military hierarchy. He was a four-star general. And he approved the launching of that study. But later on, he was replaced by a new man who didn't like at all the study. So they stepped out of EHEDN and became a completely independent and private group. But in that group, you have several senior officers, like the head of the group, General Denis Leti, who is Air Force General, another Air Force General, General Bruno Lemoine. You had Admiral Merlot, who is dead now. You had several senior engineers for armaments, so very official people, actually.
Yeah.
That's why there was many people felt that it was an official report, but it was not really.
Yeah.
That's the explanation.
Before we sort of jump into some other stuff, let me just jump back, I guess you could say, to the history of the UFO phenomenon in France. You said that there was this wave in 54, but France has a long history. Were UFOs a part of that history? Was it something that people knew about and talked about, or was it something that sort of just burst on the scene in the 1900s, if you will?
Ah, so you want to go back a long time ago in history?
Yes.
What I can say is that in France, as much as in many other countries, during the whole history of mankind, there have been quite a lot of very strange phenomena in the skies. And we had a share of that in France, too.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yes. There were observations all the centuries where we have historical records.
Yeah, okay.
To give an example, there was, in the 18th century, some peasants saw a big luminous sphere land in their fields, and they gathered around, but it was very impressive, so they didn't come too close. But suddenly there was a door which opened, and beings which stepped out and fled. That's the kind of story you have. And then the sphere exploded, if I remember well.
Weird.
Yes, very weird.
Now, do you want to talk about the UFO wave of the 50s?
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
So the 1954 wave is a very interesting wave because there were many close encounters.
Yeah.
I think there were about 300 reports of close encounters.
Wow.
One of the most famous ones happened in the north of France in a little place called Carouble in France. And the main witness was Marius de Wild, or de Wild, whatever you want to pronounce it. It's a very peculiar case because it has remained probably a secret file. That's an example of it.
Yeah.
This man was a worker in the steel works nearby, and he was living in a little house along a railway track in the country. It was a rather isolated area. And then he heard noise, his dog barking, and came out, and he came across two little beings which scared him a lot. And there was a craft landed on the railway track. And these beings went back to the craft, and it took off. But after that, they found traces on the railway track, on the wooden pieces. And later, so the gendarmes, the police de l'air, the air police, etc., the engineers of the railway came and studied all that. And 2 years later, the journalist I was talking about at the beginning, Aimé Michel, who studied that wave, met with a railway engineer who told him that they had measured the weight of the craft with the prints. Mm-hmm. It was about 30 tons.
Wow.
And Jean-Jacques Velasco, when he became the engineer at CEPRA, he tried to find the file, but could never put his hands on it.
Huh.
He wrote that in his book,
Yeah.
So that's a pretty impressive case.
Absolutely, definitely.
You see?
these sort of close encounters were going on all the time there in the 50s, huh?
Well, there were, yes, there were quite a few. There were many cases, and that's why ufology became soon active in France, actually, with a lot of groups. Well, it has. There have been ups and downs again. Mm-hmm. And recently, it has, after so many ups and downs, the French ufology has been active again. Probably also because of the reactivation of the official service.
Yes.
The present situation is, I would call it intermediary. We are not so active as like in the United States, for instance. We don't have big groups like MUFON and that.
Okay, now we've talked about the history of official French ufology via the CNES. We followed it from Gapon to SEPRA, the Cometa release. The closing of SEPRA, and of course the recreation of the new GAIPON. I guess before we jump into unofficial civilian ufology, I wanted to ask you, why do you think there is still an interest in official ufology in France when here in America in the early 70s we closed down our version of what you guys have? You know, we closed down Blue Book, and
yes,
there is no official U.S. UFO agency, but in France it's been going on since 77. Why do you think there is such a big difference there between the two countries and official stances on UFOs?
I think that we don't have so many secrets in France than in the United States. That's why. You see my point?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the American military, mm-hmm, mainly the U.S. Air Force and others, other bodies have accumulated considerable knowledge about UFOs.
Yes.
But behind doors, behind closed doors. Well, my opinion, it's that it began in the 40s already with the Roswell case and maybe other files before that. So there is a much longer and much bigger history of ufology in the United States, in your country, but a good part of it remains unknown, secret. In France, as I said, we probably have some secret files. I gave an example with the very curious landing in 1954, which was thoroughly studied, but Jean-Jacques Velasco, the engineer, couldn't find the file. When he looked for it, you know. So there are probably secret files in France, but at a very, very, very smaller scale, you know. And I would say it is probably the same in other European countries. In Italy, I know a little bit. Italy, I have been invited there several times, and twice I have seen two separate years Air Force colonel presenting the UFO studies in inside the Italian Air Force. And in Great Britain, there are secret rows, probably. Although some people think there are not, but like Nick Pope, who is a friend of mine, who was responsible for the UFOs in, as you know, in the 90s, he had the UFO desk at the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain. And they have published, they are publishing some, they are beginning to publish on the internet the UFO files, a bit like the French have done. So it's the same in Spain. They have published some files, and it's the same in South America. They have, I have been invited in the autumn in Brazil, and there were many official studies presented there. From Chile, from Peru, from Brazil, from Uruguay. Mm-hmm. So I would say that the French case is not very peculiar. It is the American case which is very peculiar today.
Yeah. Based on what you know, because I had Nick Pope on the show and we were talking about this very question of why it's still going on in the UK and not in the U.S.,
yes.
Would you say the situation is the same in the UK where, as in France, where, you know, there may be some secret files, but they're not as prevalent as in the United States?
Yes, plausibly.
Yeah.
I would say that it's also plausible that they know more than the French because they are closer to the Americans.
Yeah.
So that would say that the British are somewhere in between.
Okay. Like I said, we've talked about the official ufology world over there in France, but let's talk about the unofficial world, the civilian ufology. For starters, I guess just talk a little bit about how it sort of started over there and how long it's been going on, you know, the civilian interest in ufology and sort of that evolution. Like here in America, to give you an example, you know, it started out with scientists that were interested in it, turned into, you know, NICAP and APRO, and now we have MUFON and it had its ups and downs. Let's talk about the history of civilian ufology in France.
Well, there have been quite a number of independent ufologists, but the French have never been able to build independent groups as strong as the American ones you were just mentioning. Mm-hmm. So it's it has remained a little scattered and with ups and downs along the years and the decades, and it's still more or less the case today. However, we did have some very good studies made by independent groups and publications. And it started in the 50s with some interesting works. For instance, the study of the UFO wave, which I mentioned already, of 1954, which was very well made by Aimé Michel, with a book which he published in 1958, and some other books, some translation to some effect, like books of Frank Edwards, but this was a bit later. Now, it began to take shape in France in the 60s with two groups and magazines. The first one was called GEPA, not to be mistaken with GEPAN.
Yes.
That was in the 60s. GEPA meant Groupe d'études des phénomènes aérospatiaux, something like that. And it was, it had some backing from important people. It was presided over during several years by an Air Force general, General Lionel Chassin, with many stars on his shoulders. I don't remember. I think five stars.
Oh, wow.
But five stars is the first. We have one more star in France, you know.
Oh.
But he was an important, he was an important general in the Air Force. So that's, you see, another example as soon as the 60s of manifest interest of the military for UFOs. And they had a good review, Phénomène Spatiaux, which lasted during about 20 years, with René Fouéré, who was the editor. And there was another group, which appeared in the 60s too, called Lumière dans la Nuit, which is a poetic name, Lights in the Night. Mm-hmm. And they had a review, which still exists today, in short, LDLN. And it was started by a good man, Fernand Lagarde, who published also a very interesting book at the time, in the 70s. And later on, it was taken over by Joël Ménard, who still runs the review today. I like this review, although it is a very small one, because it has been keeping a good level of study and thinking in ufology over the years. So I want to stress that. But also there were some journalists, well-known journalists who began to take interest in UFOs in the 70s. There was a wave of interest, as I mentioned already.
Yeah.
And there was a journalist, Jean-Claude Bourret, who began to talk about UFOs in a popular radio show, and who published several books in the 70s. So it seemed to be getting momentum in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. However, it didn't went so easily because beginning in 75 appeared a movement of skepticism in French ufology. One of the main proponents of that trend was Michel Monnery, who came from that group, Lumière dans la Nuit, and who was separated from that group and became a complete skeptic with a book which was published in 1975. And he was followed by other books and authors. Michel Monnery joined the very rationalist French institution called Union Rationaliste, the Rationalist Union. Perhaps the France is the only country in the world to have an Union Rationaliste, I don't know. That is a very specific French aspect of a French situation.
Yeah.
And that Union Rationaliste was presided over by a well-known astronomer of the French establishment, who, by the way, was also a communist militant, Evry Schatzman. And this man has been very powerful at the time, and even in the 90s he remained quite powerful. I think he's dead now. But this trend, you know, is part of the French landscape. You have to know that, that there is a rationalist trend in academic the circles, the French intellectual circles, establishment, and scientific establishment. So, how do an ufology stand in front of all these people? Well, they are a small activity, and they have remained so. We have to admit that. The main shape of mind in French, the French scientific and intellectual world remains one of skepticism. I don't know if we can say that in the United States, but I'm afraid it is still a bit that way too.
Yeah.
So what happened is that at the end of the 70s, there was a very peculiar situation where official ufology was beginning. Mm-hmm. With very good studies, as I said already. But at the same time, there was a skeptical trend taking shape. And these people attacked Japon at the time.
Yes.
There was an article in the popular magazine Science et Vie attacking the Japon at the very time when it was created. It was very bizarre. Mm-hmm. And even Joël Ménard, who is a friend of mine, I met him in the beginning of the 90s when I began studying, say, ufology. He told me that at the time, at the end of the 70s, he was very discouraged because of these people like Monnery and others. Mm-hmm. And Bartel and Brucker, who had written a devastating book against the French UFO wave of 1954. And Joël Ménard was discouraged. He was considering quitting completely ufology and going back to his job, professional job as a mathematics teacher. But then he suddenly realized that the book of Bartel and Brucker on the UFO wave of 1954 was full of errors and lies. He discovered that. And then he changed his mind. And the became more than ever positive and active in ufology. So you see, there has been, since that time, since the end of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s, mm-hmm. there has been a big split in French ufology, and it still goes on today.
I'm here for one reason, to challenge you for a world championship match in the WrestleMania.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
You get the giant, the only professional wrestler who's still undefeated. And Hulk Hogan, Hulkamania, is over!
And here in America, we sort of have a split in the sense of within ufology over how to study the phenomenon. And it breaks down sort of like nuts and bolts ufology.
Yes.
Versus a spiritual aspect of ufology.
Right.
Where would you say?
We have that in France too.
Okay.
Yes, we have that in France too. we have the nuts and balls side of ufology, which is rather the side of the official groups and the official studies, actually. The Cometa report is a very nuts and balls publication and study. And the same as Jean-Jacques Velasco, the engineer, his book is very nuts and balls. And I must admit that I am myself a little rather on that line, although I differ from these officials because I open to the idea of parallel worlds and other dimensions. Mm-hmm. Now, I would like to try to explain something.
Yeah. Sure.
Because I have mixed feelings about that because I sense, well, right or wrong, that these complex aspects may be used by some people to try to confuse matters.
Yeah.
And it may be a strategy of protection of secrecy.
Huh.
So that this is a very difficult discussion to have. And maybe I'm going to shock some people now, because I think that I have this feeling about the many books of Jacques Verrey.
Yeah.
Jacques Verrey was a very good ufologist at the beginning. I should have mentioned that. He did a couple of very good books, groundwork of serious studies in the 60s. Then he went to the United States. He became assistant of astronomer Hynek, who worked at the time for the Air Force. And there was something strange happened. Toward the end of the 60s, Jacques Verrey published the first book, which was very interesting. In fact, it was translated in French in 1974, Passport to Magonia. Mm-hmm. You probably have heard of that book, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
And this was probably the first book which opened the gate to that sort of reflections that maybe UFOs were not what we thought they might be, like nuts and balls craft, but something much more, much stranger.
Yes.
Coming from other dimensions, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened the way to the reflections. Well, he wasn't the first one, actually, but he launched a new reflection on the historical aspects with all the old legends, with fairies, etc.
Yeah.
And after that, he published another book in the 70s, toward the end of the 70s, called Messengers of Deception. I remember that I was a bit shocked by that book at the time, and I wrote to him, but he didn't answer. I told him, I don't understand what you are saying now, because he was beginning to suggest that we were in the midst of many, many lies and disinformation. But he had a very strange approach to that. He was suggesting already that many stories of nuts and balls UFOs and of maybe crashed UFOs, that was a bit later, but he wrote many books like that in the 90s, like Other Dimensions, mm-hmm. Confrontations and Revelations. It was three books in a row developing that sort of idea that the stories of UFO crashes, of abductions, of extraterrestrials were all wrong, and were probably, some of them at least, were disinformation. So that's where the things were, the discussion became very complex and difficult.
Yeah.
I think. So there is that aspect, but yes, there is also in France a distinction to be made among people who believe in UFOs. I shouldn't say that. That's not a good word. who have an interest in UFOs.
There you go.
There are those who keep thinking in terms of nuts and balls crafts or being able to travel through other dimensions, which is already a bit more complex. But also, there are other people who more and more have been thinking in terms of spiritual dimensions or whether angelic or demonic also, because we also have authors like that,
mm-hmm.
in France, like in the United States. in the United States, one of the people who opened that door was John Keel, for instance.
Yeah.
With some famous book like The Mothman Prophecies. And we have that sort of thinking in France, too. We have about the same categories of thinking in France as in other countries,
yeah.
I would say.
What would you say the thoughts are in France regarding the American UFO scene? You know, is there resentment of America? Because, as you said earlier, you think that we have probably more secret files than France, and that we've been in the UFO game, if you will, for longer than France. What's the attitude in France regarding American ufology and America in general with regards to UFOs?
Yes, I think there is something like that. Yes, you said resentment. Yes, there is a kind of irritation and resentment. You see it in the Cometa report, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can sense that in the Cometa report. They mentioned the problem of UFO secrecy, and French ufologists have that way of thinking. I must admit that I do have that way of thinking too. Although I like very much the United States, and I like to be invited there. And I was last year twice, by the way. I was in Roswell and at the X conference in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure to be invited thanks to your friend, I think, Trace Sheridan.
Yes.
By the way. And so there is, let's try to be clear as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a personal grudge or hostility against the American people. Not at all. But we are some people who think that, yes, there is a big secrecy and we would like to know more about that. Now, may I add something? Another idea which seems important to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is that the question is, is it wise to ask so hard for the air of secrecy? You know, I'm not so sure at all. After all, after having thought about it, perhaps it is better if some secrets remain secret for the time being. I don't know. Perhaps I am surprising you now, but that's the way I begin to feel now.
Just to extrapolate on that, what secrets do you think need to be – I know they're secrets, so we don't know exactly what they are, but what aspects of the secrecy do you think need to be held back?
Well, I would say that it's probably very complex in the sky. Well, the history of mankind is complex, and the history of other civilizations is very complex probably.
Mm-hmm.
From extraterrestrial or other dimensional, etc.
Yeah.
And they may not be all friendly.
Yeah.
There may be some dangers outside. That's one reason. And the fact that there have been so many abductions and seemingly genetic manipulations, all that is not very friendly. Doesn't sound very friendly.
Yeah.
To me. Cattle mutilations also, and another reason is that there is that historical dimension of the whole story, which may have tremendous effects if it was revealed all at once, you know, in one big package.
Yes, and I just want to make note that the question here about American ufology came from our writer, Michael Chiron Brun, so that's not a question. I just wanted to make note of that. The next subject I want to talk to you about is the role of the media over there in France and their perspective on the UFO phenomenon and maybe how that's changed over the years. In your recent article here, The Death and Rebirth of Official French Ufology, you mentioned that it seems like maybe things are getting better. So I guess just talk about that evolution and maybe when it was bad and how it's getting better and all that good stuff and how it's changed over the years.
Yes. All right. Well, there has been some hesitation in the French press in the last few years, especially regarding the recreation of the official service. But yes, as I said in my article, perhaps things are, the mood is changing and is becoming a little more positive and favorable. Well, we will see if this is confirmed in the coming months and years. But if you permit, I would go back in the years before.
Sure, go ahead.
There was a more open attitude during many years, in fact. Like I mentioned already, a series of articles and radio programs in the 70s, which were favorable, and like the radio program of Jean-Claude Bourret. And he was very popular at the time. I remember there was a conference by Jean-Claude Bourret in the 70s at the big concert hall in Paris, the Salle Pleyel. It was full of people. There were 2,000-3,000 people, I don't know, at least.
Wow.
To listen to Bourret on UFOs, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still favorable. Even in the 80s, we had some... There was a very interesting program with many people in 1984 on French TV. And Jean-Jacques Velasco was there, and there were other well-known people. And again, when I published my first book, that was in 1994,
mm-hmm.
I had a number of radio and TV invitations on French television and the press. I had articles like in the weekly magazine Paris Match and French television. But there was a big accident in the following year. That was the scandal between quotes of the autopsy, you know, the alien autopsy.
Oh yeah.
Which appeared in the summer of 1995, and you know, it was everywhere in the around the world. There was the big shock of the alien autopsy.
Yeah.
And in France, it was particularly dramatic because it triggered a very, very violent campaign against, not only against that film, but against Roswell about UFOs.
Wow.
More generally. What happened is that when the first articles appeared, there was a first show on the number one French television network, TF1, at the end of June, with Jacques Pradel, the journalist Jacques Pradel. And then hell began to break loose with a series of articles led by Pierre Lagrange. I think I mentioned this
mm-hmm.
man already. He was a sociologist who has been discreetly negative, I would say, very ambiguous. But then, at that time, he signed a big article in the popular magazine Science TV, mixing everything and saying that it was completely ridiculous and that Roswell is ridiculous. It's a story of weather balloons, Mogul balloon, and that there was an inquiry which had been made by the General Accounting Office, an official study. If you know a little bit about Roswell, you know what I am referring to.
Yep.
There was, which was published about the same time, nearly the same time as the autopsy movie. And that, said Lagrange, they had accepted the Mogul balloons explanation of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not true. If you read the study of the GAO, it is not true. They didn't say that. They said that the inquiry about what crashed at Roswell continues. That's what they said.
Yes.
So it was very, very bizarre and aggressive attack suddenly, led by Lagrange and followed by many others. To tell you a little detail, amusing detail, in the first article, he mentioned that he and his colleagues of Science TV, they mentioned that there was green blood in that film, which was a proof that it was Baronet, it was hoax.
Yeah.
The film was in black and white, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was crazy. It was very strange. What happened next is that Jacques Pradel, the man from TF1, didn't realize that it was going to be very, very dangerous for him. And he presented the film in October in a big show. I remember very sharply, you know, the story, because I was just publishing my own book on Roswell at that time.
Yes.
And I was invited at that show. It seemed to go well on the stage, but then it was a very, very harsh campaign, and he lost his job, actually.
Oh, wow.
He was the best paid man in French TV, and he lost his job after that, to tell you.
Wow.
The situation. And that was a turning point, and the French media became very negative, globally, against, not only against that story of Autopsy and Roswell and all these stories of secrecy, of conspirationist theories, etc. They became very, very hostile and negative. I am able to speak about that for my own sake, because I published several books and with dwindling sales, you know,
yeah.
at that time during these years. And but what happened is that there was a reaction, and we have already mentioned the Comita report in 1999, so that was the beginning of maybe a new page which happened then.
Yeah.
And which led to the recreation of the official service in 2005, and there was a change of mood in the media. For instance, the same newspapers which had been so violent in 1995 and years after, which were L'Express and Libération. Libération is a trending daily paper, mm-hmm. and L'Express is a major weekly magazine. They had been very aggressive against the film, the Autopsy, and again against the Comita report in 1999. But then when the CNES, the French National Center for Space Studies, reopened the studies, they changed their mood, and L'Express, the magazine L'Express, devoted six pages, positive pages, on the CNES studies, the Chapon studies, yeah. in that happened in 2006. But there was a kind of hesitation. Some papers kept publishing skeptical articles, but others began to change a little bit, and I can testify to that, because last year, I had a one full page interview in the same newspaper, Libération, and it was positive. You know? They gave me the one page to talk positively about UFOs. The fight is going on. The fight is going on.
Yeah.
Between skeptics and believers, between quotes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there was, in last year, there was a very negative, a big TV program on national television, which was quite negative. It gave the floor to the skeptics, like this man from the Spanish CICOP, you know, which is called the Group Zetetic. The Zetetics, it's a crazy name. And the leader is a scientific person, Henry Brock, who was on the stage and who had the last word with Pierre Lagrange also and people like that. Mm-hmm. So the situation today is more open, probably, but it is not. We have not yet won the game.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about the media and the government and the people, in quotes, like you say, the believers. What about the everyday people in France? What is their perspective on the UFO phenomenon, would you say? You say, you know, that originally a lot of these ufologists, after they didn't get answers, they became skeptical. Would you say that's sort of the general trend in France as far as the people go? Or what would you say is the attitude in France of the general population?
From what we can learn from, with the polls, we don't have many polls, not as many as in the United States. I made a study about that several years ago. And when, let's say, roughly speaking, the American public is ready to admit the reality of UFOs, I would say, it depending on the years, from 30% to 50%, I would say. Mm-hmm. I don't know if recent polls have confirmed that. It depends how the questions are posed, etc., you know. But it's more like 50% clearly. But in France, it is less. I would say that it is rather on the side of 20% or 30% would be a maximum in France.
Okay.
You see, so the French people are more skeptical, yes, than the American people regarding UFOs and maybe other things. We still have a long way to go in France, I believe.
Okay.
But we are making some progress.
There you go. Thanks to people like you, of course.
Well, I hope so, yes. Yeah. I have written five or six books now. And there are many other books. I would like to pay tribute to my friend who is dead now. Pierre Guérin was an astronomer, maybe the only astronomer who dared to take sides publicly in favor of UFOs many years ago. He was a guest on a big French TV show on the beginning of the 70s, by the way, and where he presented the book of astronomer Hynek, Alan Hynek. Mm-hmm. And it was a successful show. And the last year of his life, in 2000, he finally published his own only book on UFOs called UFOs, the Mechanism of Disinformation. So he was very concerned about the problem of UFO secrecy.
Yeah.
There have been some other books like that. I would like to quote the book of my friend François Parmentier, which was published a couple of years ago, UFOs, 60 Years of Disinformation. And it's a very well-made book. But in these books... and others have been attacked by Pierre Lagrange last year. So, again, here we go again. In a book which has a very, very peculiar title, it's called UFOs, What They Don't Want You to Know. And the subtitle says Army, Secret Services, Debunkers, and Other Master of Intoxication. So when you read that, if you don't know anything about UFOs and you see that cover, you may think, oh, I am going to learn things about UFO secrets. But not at all. It is exactly the opposite, in fact. Because what he says is that the real debunkers are those who claim that there are UFO secrets. Because there are no secrets. That's what he says. It's a very skeptical book. And a very aggressive book against all those who have worked and written about the problem of UFO secrecy.
Wow.
The main line of the book is, no, they are wrong. They are the real debunkers. There are no UFO secrets. And it has been a success. Well, rather, I don't know if it's a big success in the public, but it has awarded Lagrange another round of invitation in the big media. He's still there on the TV programs in the French press, like the Figaro and all those other publications. He's still there. So it's a mixed bag today, you see. There are pros and cons. It is very difficult to make a prognostic about how things are going to turn out in France in the coming months and years.
Yeah.
I don't really know.
And what would you say the reaction was over in France to the release of the French UFO files last March? And I'm sure a lot of the American listeners and American ufologists, we don't speak French, so we have to rely on folks like you to tell us what they said. So what was your take on the files that got released?
Well, my opinion is that it is a very positive action, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But as the engineer warned, there are no new big files,
yeah,
previously unreleased. The biggest case is we know them already, among those which are being published.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very positive action, and it has been globally rather well received. As I mentioned, the number one French weekly magazine, L'Express, has published six full pages, positive pages on the Gaëtan files, covering several cases like Trans en Provence, the landing in 1991, and other cases, famous cases like there was this French Air France commercial plane with Commander Duboc, who is a witness, interesting witness, of, who saw a huge UFO over the area of Paris. Now, this is a bit controversial because there was a radar record, but not exactly at the same place as the UFO, so it is a complex case, and which allows the skeptics to denounce it as a false case, etc. So there is still controversy, and the skeptics have published a book criticizing practically all the best cases of Chepard. But it is not, they didn't find any publisher on paper. They published it on the internet, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it is funny because there are actually many more books positive on UFOs than skeptical books. On the other hand, in the media and the television, so far, I think we can say that the skeptics still have the advantage.
Yeah.
In the debate. It's curious.
Yeah, it is interesting. Do you think that that is a result of an organized cover-up, if you will, and it involves the media as well, and the government and that whole thing?
That's a big question. Is there a French chapter of organized cover-up? I wouldn't go as far as saying that, but I strongly feel, like the people of Comita, by the way, that, yes, there are some agents of debunking in France, yes.
Yes.
I don't want to insist too much on that, but we definitely have this feeling, like my friend Parmentier and people of Comita and others.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have that impression, but we can't prove that.
Yeah.
It's difficult to discuss that.
Just like in America.
Yes, probably, yes.
Now, in your article, you raise an interesting point about the question of percentages. And that's definitely something I want to talk to you about. So let's sort of dive into that issue of percentages, because you sort of take the perspective that it's more than the usual believed 5 to 10% that most people chalk up, and you say it's probably higher. So let's talk about that.
Well, yes, it's one of the very positive aspects of the release of the files, the official French files, because they have completely reevaluated the percentage of unidentified cases.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the website, you will see that they give 28% of unidentified cases. So it is much more than it used to be. Even recently, in the books still favorable to UFOs, like the book of Velasco and the book of Yves Sillard, the president of the steering committee of Japan, they gave figures of 13% to 14%. So it's quite a jump to 28% now. It's rather peculiar. But when you go back in time and you see the story of the percentages, you realize that there were other high percentages like that. For instance, in the 1950s in the United States, the Blue Book asked a study to the Battelle Memorial Institute, and it was they arrived at in the Special Report 14, how is it called now, to a percentage of 21.5% of unknowns. It was a very serious study in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
over the period of 1952 to 1954. There are nearly 2,000 cases, nearly, about the same as Japon, the same order of figures. And there was even another percentage, even higher, in the first study of the engineer Claude Poher. He reached 38%. On the other hand, we have been living during several decades with official percentage much lower than that, like 2% or 2 to 5%.
Yes.
The last word of Blue Book was about 5%. Mm-hmm. And perhaps you will remember that Nick Pope gives about the same figures for the official files in England.
Yeah.
2 to 5%. Well, perhaps they are going to revise that figure too. So I think that, well, it depends how you consider the cases, of course. But I would say that very roughly the number of unknown cases is more on the side of 20% than 2%,
okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. The final sort of question I have here, and hopefully we can get it in, is what would you say the state of French ufology is nowadays? Is it coming around? Is it promising?
Yes, it's. I think we can be fairly optimistic, I would say, that the French are back on the map of ufology and that we are going to make some progress, hopefully. I hope so.
Excellent. And what's coming up next for you? What do you have coming down the line? Any more trips to America? I hope so. And, you know, what do you have,
well,
what do you have
possibly
planned?
I don't have any invitation for the time being.
Yes.
But, yes, if I am invited, I will be glad to come, of course. But I have just published a new book, which is not completely new, which is called Celestial Visions and Cosmic Visions, in which I try to cover the whole history of visions of all kinds, from ancient mythology to UFOs today. And I have even included science fiction and modern art, which is another topic I have studied a lot. So it's a general presentation of cosmic and celestial visions. The idea is that our relations with the cosmos is very important, and we have perhaps forgotten that.
Yeah.
Well, that's my idea.
Okay. Gildas, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and for your patience here with the phone issues. I really appreciate you're giving me so much time and being available over the last few days to take this interview.
Well, I was pleased to do that.
Excellent, excellent. And I hope that we can speak again sometime and really keep exploring this international aspect of ufology, because I think France has a rich history,
right,
and a fascinating perspective on the UFO scene. So thank you again for coming on the show.
I thank you to have invited me.
That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 3. Big, big, super huge thanks to Gildas Bourdais for coming on the show. I don't have a website to plug, but we do have a link up at the audio page to an in-depth article he wrote on the death and rebirth of official French UFO studies. Fascinating piece, 10 pages long. It's really outstanding stuff. Definitely want to check that out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback. This week, we're not going to read a specific email, just respond to some of the emails we've gotten here over the past week. Many people wrote in to us about the death of esoteric radio pioneer Michael Corbin, and I definitely just want to put over how hugely important Michael Corbin was to esoteric radio. He was definitely one of the people who laid the groundwork for folks like me and shows like BOA Audio. For those of you unfamiliar with Michael Corbin, definitely want to check out the website rememberingmichael.wordpress.com. It's a new website that's been set up to, as the title sort of suggests, remember Michael Corbin. He was a tremendous esoteric radio interviewer. He spoke to just about every big name in the field, and as I said, he definitely was a trailblazer for the online esoteric world as well. We'd like to make a big point here on the show of remembering the history of the paranormal world that so often gets lost in the shuffle. We definitely want to put over Michael Corbin here at the end of the program, dedicate this week's show to him, and thank him for his work and contributions to the field of esoteric radio. If you'd like to be a part of BOA Audio listener feedback, there's three ways to do it. Yes, we've added one. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com, or you can go to binallofamerica.com and click the contact button. The third method is join up at the BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. Join up there. It's free. You can post your questions, comments, and discuss the various BOA Audio episodes there. I'm going to try and throw that plug in more often here at the end of the show for folks who haven't checked out the USOF.com, the official BOA forum. Regardless of how you get in touch with me, it all funnels towards BOA HQ and into the BOA Audio listener feedback mailbag. Up next, of course, is the thanks portion of the show. Let me run down the list of the fantastic BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Jovi, Tina Senna, and Rochelle Hawks. There's always some great stuff from the BOA writing staff. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, there are new columns at BOA on a continual basis. So there's so much going on at BOA. If you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns, you're only getting half the story. BanalofAmerica.com, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Much like I was kvetching about last week, what you just heard in tonight's episode, hour and a half long call to Paris, France. A few weeks ago, you heard an hour and a half call to Ireland. Before that, a 2-hour call to South Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, that's 3 long international phone calls. I can't even tell you how much those cost me. If we want to keep reaching out across the oceans and speaking with great esoteric minds from around the globe, we're going to need your help to offset the costs. How do you do that? Simple. You go to banalofamerica.com or the BOA Audio Archive page, click the PayPal button, and make a donation. No donation is too small, and all donations go towards keeping BOA Audio and Banal of America up and running, and keeps the cost at what it is now, which is free for all of our great listeners and readers worldwide. Next week on the program, it's the 2nd annual BOA Audio Baseball Special. We got so much great feedback on that last year that I definitely want to do another one, and so it shall come to pass. I've already taped about a half hour with Paul Kimball, taped a half hour with Lauren Coleman. I've got 3 other folks on tap to tape. We're going to be talking about all the big stories in the baseball world from the offseason. We're going to get the opinions of former BOA Audio guests, each of whom are great esoteric pundits and researchers. Plus, we're going to do something a little different this year. We're going to get predictions down to the division winners and wild card winners, National League, American League champions, who's going to win the World Series. All of the guests are going to have their predictions. And then at the end of the season, we're going to look back and figure out who did best and all that fun stuff. So it's going to be a really fun episode. I'm already having a lot of fun taping these interviews. For the baseball fans in the audience, they're going to enjoy this show a lot, I'm sure. For those folks that aren't baseball fans, I apologize, but we want to do something a little off the beaten path, a little off topic, a little lighthearted here as the springtime begins and the baseball season kicks off. So next week it is the 2nd annual BOA Audio Baseball Special featuring Paul Kimball, Lauren Coleman, and a few other guests to be named later. And on that note, we close it out here for the week. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have or had a wonderful Easter holiday. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening and signing off.